Bucks and subs. You've been listening to Bucks Basketball on the home of the Bucks, WTMJ.
You heard how it went down. Now time to sum it all up. This is Bucks Talk, presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all. Recap everything you need to know about this game right now. Now here's your host, your analyst, and your MC for the evening.
Make some noise!
Justin Garcia.
Yeah!
This was not what any of us expected when this series began, but the longer this series went on, I would be lying if I said this was totally unexpected, that the Miami Heat would eliminate the Bucks. It started to feel less than good a couple of games into this series. The performance over the weekend in Game 3 is what really raised your eyebrows when the Bucks were run off the floor. And Game 4, the way that ended, may have effectively ended this series, because this Bucks team never looked quite the same from that point forward. And this was not the same group we saw overcome these moments and play at their best with their back against the wall two summers ago on a run that would eventually lead them to the second championship in franchise history. This was not that same group tonight in the way that they played, in the way that they executed, or in the way that they defended. And the Miami Heat earned this one, beating the Bucks tonight and ending their season in five games in the first round of the playoffs as the one seed in the entire bracket, with a 128-126 overtime victory here at Fiserv Forum. 855-616-1620 is the Old National Bank talk and text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. This is the last Bucks talk of the season. We will not get a chance to do this again until the fall, next October. So this is our last chance to dig into everything here over the course of the season, over the course of this series, and over the course of this series deciding game tonight. The final chance for you to share your thoughts on Bucks Talk tonight, 855-616-1620. And I think the thing you will really leave this series with more than anything is what I said at the top, in that this just did not appear to be the same team, the same group that came back from similar spots. 2 years ago, all we touted was the Bucks were a team that you could not trust in the playoffs. And I had this conversation a couple of weeks ago with Ben Golliver on the playoff preview show we did, that Ben Golliver and a few others have been quick to point out, I don't trust the 76ers. That's not a team I'm going to pick to go deep in the playoffs. But as I pointed out, look, we had those same conversations about the Bucks. I don't disagree with what you're saying, but if we're being fair, everybody said the same thing about the Bucks after they lost to the Miami Heat in the bubble, after they lost and blew a 2-0 lead against the Toronto Raptors in the conference finals the year prior to that. And this team made the move to bring in Drew Holiday. All of those questions were silenced. They became more trustworthy in the playoffs. They won a closeout game, a Game 7 on the road, for the first time in their franchise history, and they did that taking down a Kevin Durant-led Nets team in a series where Kevin Durant played for 7 games, like Jimmy Butler did in this series, for 5 games. A team in the Brooklyn Nets, while maybe hobbled, still had a big secondary star in James Harden. They had Kyrie Irving for 2.5 games in that series as well. More firepower, and this Bucks team answered every single challenge. They experienced a deflating, difficult loss to take in Game 5 of that series, where it felt like you were going to seize control and potentially close out the Nets in 6 games. Kevin Durant goes nuts, Jeff Green hits 7 3-pointers, and you give up a double-digit lead and suddenly come back to Milwaukee facing elimination and win by 15 points and win on the road in Game 7. All of those things inspired confidence that this team, despite the way things looked through the first 4 games of this series, would turn things around. You looked at things such as the Bucks, up until today, being the betting favorite in this series. And even then, the Miami Heat were very, very slight favorites in that series. We kept pointing to reasons why this could turn around, and ultimately it just did not. A lot of that is a credit to the Miami Heat for what they did, and specifically what Jimmy Butler did. And I do want to get into some of the defensive coverages we saw against Jimmy Butler, not only tonight, but all throughout this series. But ultimately, the Miami Heat made much, much bigger plays and made more of them throughout the course of this season or of this series. And this Bucks group just did not look like that same group we saw 2 years ago that had all the answers, that was up for those challenges, and rose to the occasion in the biggest moments of those big series and big games. 855-616-1620 is the old National Bank talk and text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk as the Bucks season comes to an end. Before the NFL draft, the last week of April, something none of us expected to be saying tonight. And yet here we are as Jimmy Butler goes nuts and the Miami Heat win this one in overtime, ending the season of the Bucks. 128-126 overtime victory for Miami. 855-616-1620 is the old National Bank talk and text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. We will hear some from the locker room as Giannis has just addressed the media. We'll bring you some of that and some of the takeaways as Giannis was asked about the defense on Jimmy Butler. We'll get into how the Bucks defended Jimmy Butler or tried to defend Jimmy Butler throughout the course of this series. And it's early, but we will take a look into the offseason and where you go from here if you're the Milwaukee Bucks losing in the first round as a one seed. Not only in the East, but the one seed in the playoffs. I mentioned this is the sixth time that has happened in NBA history, so we'll take a look back at the previous five and where this Bucks group goes from here after a very, very deflating performance against the Miami Heat brings their season to an end in the first round of the playoffs. 855-616-1620, the old National Bank talk and text line to join us tonight. More after this on Bucks Talk. Say goodbye to 128-126 overtime score. The Miami Heat score 128 and they come to Milwaukee and end the season of the Bucks in five games. So just the sixth time in NBA history that a one seed has lost in the first round of the playoffs, and the first time it has happened since the Chicago Bulls did it in 2012 against the Philadelphia 76ers. Now, the caveat on that series is Derrick Rose was injured late in Game 1 of that series and did not return. Giannis was injured in Game 1 of this series. He did return for the final two games, and the Bucks were down 2-1 when Giannis made his return to the floor. But this isn't a matter of simply Giannis going down and the Bucks losing this series. Much more went wrong than just the injury to Giannis early in the series. And one of the more interesting comments from Giannis to reporters after this game was when Giannis was asked about what the Miami Heat did to the Bucks in this series. We'll bring you that in just a little bit, but Giannis's comment was very interesting because I think if we are being honest, his answer is how all of us felt. When asked about what Miami did so well in this series, he said Miami played this series to beat us. We were playing this series to win a championship and may have been looking a little too far ahead. I don't think any of us expected the Miami Heat to win this series when we were trying to go through projections and try to piece together the play-in tournament and figure out what would happen. Miami was one of those teams you didn't want to play, but I think we kept hammering home, well, I don't think Miami would beat Milwaukee. They're just going to execute. They have a very good coach. They have a guy like Jimmy Butler who, even though the Bucks held him to 58 points in an entire series 2 years ago, Jimmy Butler has been an incredible performer in the playoffs. And that may be the most remarkable thing, is 2 years ago, somehow, the Bucks held Jimmy Butler to 58 points in a four-game series. You thought, okay, Miami would make it difficult for you. You'd beat them, but that's not the tune-up you want in the first round. You'd rather have the Raptors or the Hawks or the Chicago Bulls or a team like that, but never did it enter into the equation for any of us that the Miami Heat could or would beat the Bucks in a first-round series for anybody outside of the Miami Heat themselves and anybody in South Florida. That's how they approached this series. They came here to win. They were the more aggressive team and the more competitive team in Game 1. The Bucks knocked down a playoff record 25 threes that lifted them to a win in Game 2. And then the Miami Heat ran the Bucks off the floor in a disturbing Game 3 in Miami. And ultimately, this series will be remembered not by Giannis missing 2.5 games, not by Wesley Matthews missing this series, or most of this series, I should say, not by Giannis not defending Jimmy Butler. This series will be remembered by the Bucks' close to games 4 and 5. To lose a game in game 4 where you took an 11-point lead into the fourth quarter, where you had a 12-point lead with 6.5 minutes remaining, and then tonight to take a 16-point lead into the fourth quarter and lose in overtime. That is how this series will be remembered, and potentially how this group is going to be remembered on the way out. Obviously, you can't take away the championship and everything this team did 2 seasons ago. But these types of losses are losses that usually lead to some type of shakeup. 855-616-1620 is the old National Bank Talk and Text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Let's go to the phone lines and talk with Will I Am. You're up first on the show.
Justin, what up? Hey, guys. Got 3 points here, and I just want you to elaborate on all of them. First one being that tonight was possibly one of the worst disastrous meltdowns I can remember in sports history that I've witnessed, next to the Packers against the Seattle Seahawks in that horrendous game. But tonight, the thing that really stuck out to me was the will. Like Giannis said, the other team, Miami, dialed it in the whole time. They wanted this game. They demanded this game, and they never let up. And that was one of the big problems I've had. Again, not trying to compare the NFL to NBA, but saw Coach Bud play the Mike McCarthy card. You saw him take it extra conservative and try to just do things that we don't normally do. And to witness our team do these meltdowns as such, like to show that we've never been there, that calls for immediate coaching change. Justin, I've told you this all season long. We're going to get torched if we give teams opportunities, even little breathing room, to get any life. And go figure it's Jimmy Butler, the Marquette vet, coming back home, looking to, you know, avenge that series where he only had 54 points that whole series. And I'm stunned that we couldn't adapt or adjust. And that's enough for me for coaching. You know, if you can't adjust or adapt with the lead, I think that's got to go. What do you think about that?
So I'll say this. I'm never going to advocate for somebody to lose their job. It's happened. A 1 seed is lost to an 8 seed 5 times previously. None of those 5 times did the head coach of that 1 seed get fired. Now, it was Hall of Fame caliber coaches for the most part. Tom Thibodeau was the most recent coach to do so with the Chicago Bulls. But again, Derrick Rose, the MVP of the league, went down in game 1 of that series. Greg Popovich and his Spurs lost in a 7-game series as the 1 seed to the Memphis Grizzlies. George Karl and the Seattle Supersonics, that was a best-of-5 series. But they lost as a 1 seed. The Knicks won as an 8 seed, but that wasn't an 8 seed. That was the strike-shortened season. So there's a lot of caveats to it. And, of course, the We Believe Warriors beating the Dallas Mavericks. That was an Avery Johnson coach Mavericks team. He was not fired after that. So if we're going by what we've seen historically, we've never seen the coach get fired when that's the end result. But where it's going to be complicated for the Bucks is – this wasn't just one or two things, and you highlighted and hit on quite a few of them. But look, we knew this team was not getting older. This team is older. It's an old team that's getting older. And I think at times you saw that. And Brooke Lopez was probably your second best and most reliable player in this series. Brooke Lopez, as great as he was in this series and as great as he's been all season, he's 35 years old, and he's a year removed from back surgery, and you do have to start thinking about life after Brooke Lopez. He is a free agent this summer, and all indications are he wants to finish his career here. But again, we talked about this roster already being old. Chris Middleton, everybody's already had that conversation. And Chris Middleton turned in two very, very good offensive performances in this series. He was one of your more reliable scorers in this series, but he doesn't appear to be the same guy defensively. Maybe that's just in the short term. Maybe it's a sign of things to come. The larger point is the Bucks don't really have a whole lot of reset options or get-out-of-jail-free cards to play with the roster because of how it's constructed. And you could say, well, let Brooke Lopez walk, let Chris Middleton walk and sign somebody else. That's not how it works in the NBA. That's not how it works with the cap, where the Bucks are already well over the salary cap and into the tax. You don't have that money to spend. It's not like you can let Chris and Brooke walk and, hey, we got $50 million to spend on somebody. You got a $6 million taxpayer mid-level exception to use. And once the new CBA goes into place, you won't even have that to use. So there's not a whole lot in terms of personnel. I say that knowing John Horst has done some things we didn't assume would be doable in terms of roster acquisition and how he shaped this group. But it's going to be incredibly difficult to change the players. And that's the one thing where it's going to be interesting because something has to be done. You can't lose as a one seed in the first round when you put so much into the regular season to get that one seed and set yourself up for another championship with an older group whose window is starting to close. But there's not a whole lot of options with the roster, and that really leaves just one thing.
Yeah, you're right. Like I said, this is one of these moments where this is a moment of truth. You know, I'm not in favor of having any of these players walk. But again, we're running into this moment with the new CBA ruling, with all the new adjustments due to the leaking with money. You know, this is going to be an interesting task going forward. And what really confused me the most, Justin, is we traded so much away but not even play Jay Crowder. That was something that really hurt me, especially knowing that He could have done something, I imagine.
Let me say this. It's what we saw from Jay Crowder in this series didn't really inspire confidence that Jay Crowder was a guy that you could trust on the floor and certainly not a guy you would trust to defend Jimmy Butler. He didn't look great. And it was an up-and-down transition onto the roster for Jay Crowder as well. He had some good moments in the regular season. He had some moments where I think people started to raise an eyebrow and think, well, is he the guy that we saw 3 years ago and 2 years ago in the bubble and in the finals, or is he the guy that we saw last year? And this series, what we did see from Jay early in the series, it trended more towards the latter, where he did not look good. So I understand that component of not seeing a whole lot of Jay Crowder. You didn't see him at all in Game 4. You saw him for, what, 40 seconds tonight at the end of the first half. But that being said, to your point, I mean, you gave up 5 second-round draft picks for him, which it's not 5 first-round picks, but that's the capital the Bucks have and are going to have to make deals going forward. So you gave up a lot in terms of what you have in your war chest, and to realize midway through the series or come to the realization, hey, this guy just isn't good enough for our group or good enough to trust. That's one of the troubling things is you put so much into that Jay Crowder acquisition. It was kind of the worst-kept secret in the league that these two sides would eventually link up, and I think we all talked ourselves into Jay Crowder being that missing piece, and seeing it not happen is certainly a tough pill to swallow. But again, to your point, look at what Miami did. Duncan Robinson didn't play at all for large portions of this season. He was out of the rotation. Zeller was not an NBA-caliber player for most of this season. He got the opportunities. Miami had guys that they played out of necessity, and they came up with some big moments. But the point being, you can't come up with those moments unless you're on the floor. So there was nothing working on Jimmy Butler. It's not so much these last two games that I would have a problem with Jay Crowder not seeing the floor that much or at all. It was earlier in the series. I get why Bud came to that conclusion, but that's the tough part is your talent evaluation, and that was the missing piece or how you viewed it to kind of tie the roster together, and it was far from it.
You're 100% right, Justin. It just hurt being there, knowing that even if he was in for 1 minute to give our players a break, or I know I'm not advocating for hard fouls, but again, we let that rain come down from Jimmy, and he literally had our name, our number. It just felt unstoppable. And just to know that, you know, he's good for defense, did we even bother the shot? And I know that we didn't really go to our bench much with, like, Bobby. I know that he had the weird moments in this game where it seems like he shied away from shots that he usually, you know, we're used to seeing him knock down, the 15-footer, the three. And it would just, the game felt weird to watch, and that 6 minutes left just killed me, man. That hurt.
Well, it honestly felt like you were slowly bleeding out the last two games, where once Miami tied it in game four, I think we all kind of felt like, well, this is over. If they've climbed the mountain and Jimmy Butler is doing what he's doing, it's going to be tough to snatch momentum away from this team. And tonight, you're 16. When we went to our break between the third and fourth quarter, Dave Kane and I were talking, and we both looked at each other and both started to say the same thing immediately of, you know, 16, it's still not that comfortable. Like, it feels like it needs to be more, and that's not a lot. So you got to start this fourth quarter strong. And they didn't. It was an 8-0 run by Miami to start that quarter. And once it got to 3-2 is when you were starting to really, really pucker up. And to me, the most surprising thing of all tonight was, for all the talk I did at the start of the show for how this team played and how they rose to the occasion and the big moments that they had. Giannis going head-to-head with Kevin Durant, toe-to-toe with Kevin Durant in that series. Chris Middleton hitting the game winner against the Heat in game one of the playoffs, hitting the game-winning shot against the Brooklyn Nets, having a 20-point quarter and 40-point scored against the Atlanta Hawks to help get past the Hawks into the finals without Giannis. And then what this team did to come back from down two games to none on the road in Phoenix against the Suns. They rose to the occasion in those moments. And tonight, not only did they not do that, but look, I'm not going to question somebody's intensity or effort level or any of that, but they did not look like a group of players that was ready for that moment.
1,000% agree. I felt that. It seemed that moment, as, like I said, that 6 minute mark when the crowd was cheering and trying to get us back in the game, it felt like these guys did not want that moment like I wanted that moment. If, you know, I'm not Giannis, I'm not Drew, but again, we should have just gone right to the cup. We had Brooke at such an advantage, getting him right to the top for that 1-2 movement out of the top of the key to then hitting Giannis, but oh, man, just knowing the bunnies that we missed and the misses at the free throw line really hurts. It cost us, especially.
The free throw misses are huge, and I will get to that in a moment here. Thanks for the call tonight and all season long. Will, you got anything else?
Go on.
Free throws were certainly huge as well, and it was, what, 16 free throws that they missed, I believe, Tommy? Do you know off the top of your head? 17. 17 missed free throws. And a majority came from Giannis, who was 10 of 23. But, I mean, Brooke Lopez goes 1 of 3, uncharacteristic for him. One of those was big, too, because it let the Heat get it down to 6 at halftime. You hit both free throws. It's a 10-point game. Instead, you hit the 1 to make it 9, and another one of those problem areas for the Bucks all season, or all series, I should say, was how they closed out quarters and halves. You go 1 of 2 on free throws from Brooke, and you, with, what, 4 seconds left, allow Miami to get down the floor and get up a pretty good look at 3 that goes in. So you go from what should have been a 10-point margin at halftime to 6. It was plays like that all series long. Miami was the more athletic, the faster, the more aggressive team. And when we talk about reshaping this roster, that is the biggest thing you have to look at. But again, it is not going to be easy with the handcuffs the Bucks are wearing with their current roster construction. 855-616-1620 is the Old National Bank Talk and Text line to join us tonight on the final edition of Bucks Talk this season. Yes, the Bucks go out in the first round to the Miami Heat. Justin in North Carolina, you're up next.
Hey, Justin, man. Super tough night. I'll start the call like I did the entire time. Shout out to my guy, Dick in Port Washington, man. Man, Jordan Nwora with that classless tweet after we lost. Can't even respect that dude anymore after the whole year we've cheered him on this year. It's just
awful.
Oh, he tweeted out something with a laughing emoji. Crazy with a laughing emoji, man. It's just like right after the loss. Like, darn, man. It's just it's really tough on us Bucks fans, guys like myself, like you, like Dick, that live and breathe every single game with this. I know I haven't called the post-game show in a while. Been busy with work and with traveling and with life. But it just – this is probably one of the most gut punches that Wisconsin sports fans have had. I don't feel like the better team won. The caller before me hit so many great points. I don't understand how we don't use a timeout with 0.5 seconds. I don't understand how we don't use a timeout in overtime. I'm so confused by it. I will not take away from Bud, and I know there's a lot of Bud slander out here, but Bud is also the guy that helped us to that championship, yeah. Regardless of what we want to think. Drew is that guy. Middleton is that guy. There's a lot of guys. It's unfortunate Grayson didn't get a shot off. It's unfortunate Chris didn't get a shot off. It's unfortunate we didn't call a timeout. All this stuff is unfortunate, but we should have never been in this predicament. Never. I thought bringing in Ingles was a great signing. I even thought bringing in Crowder was a great signing. I mean, we just got a lot to retool. I don't know, man. These things get tougher as you get older in life. The one thing that I tweeted and I reiterated on the air, I'm 40. I saw the Bucks win a championship. Mm-hmm. That gives me solace in all of this. It still sucks, though. I hope we can rebound next year. I don't even want to think about losing Middleton. I don't want to think about losing Coach Bud. Like, we should not be here. And I don't want to sound like a sour grape sore loser, but talent for talent, you look at this team on paper, we didn't play up to our ability, and Miami played above their ability. Sorry, go ahead.
No, and I was going to say, I mean, that might be the most difficult to process in all of this is this should not have been close. And games aren't played on paper or in spreadsheets or anything else, you know, shot quality and what teams are getting. But on paper, this should not have been a close series. Jimmy Butler was the best player in this series. But outside of that, if we drafted teams and said you can only draft players from these two teams. Despite what Jimmy Butler did in this series, Giannis would still be the number one overall pick. Jimmy Butler's going second.
By far.
But after that, the Bucks are probably getting the next two. I mean, you can make a case for Bam Adebayo, fine. After that, every single pick is likely going to be a Bucks player. And that's the tough part here is they were the deeper team. They had more talent. And I really think a lot of this comes down to what I mentioned Giannis said in his post-game exchange as well, in that, to paraphrase, you know, the Heat were playing this series to beat us, and we kind of approached this series to win a championship and probably looked way too far ahead.
Yeah, that too. I mean, a tough part about it for me as a fan is when the refs swallow the whistle, I'm cool with them swallowing the whistle if you do it both ways. Yeah. I felt like Butler got quite like the foul that they called on Brook Lopez when Butler just dribbled the ball out of bounds. Like, sometimes you got to let this guy be a basketball player. And if he's him the way that he's saying he's him and stuff like that, some of that flopping crap and stuff that he does is just atrocious. Strewed with that. I mean, if this is a Wisconsin Badgers game or a Marquette Golden Eagles game, if Strew does what he did to get those three free throws at the end of the game, that's a foul. That's an offensive technical foul or whatever on him. He stuck his leg out and all that. It's just crap, man. And that's the type of stuff that really sours the NBA. You, if you're going to let these guys play, let them play both ways. And I know there's a lot of Heat fans saying, oh, well, the Bucks had more free throws. Well, what do you expect with Giannis going to the bucket every possession with your guys pulls up for 15-foot mid-range shots? You're going to get more foul calls going to the bucket. And I'm not going to completely blame the referees either, because three field goals in the fourth quarter is atrocious when you have Brook Lopez out there with a bunch of guys that cannot check him. Like, we see Brook score 36 and score 18 or 20-something in this game. You just got to feed him on the post sometimes. And if Giannis isn't 100%, just give the ball to Brook. It's a life lesson. It's a tough lesson to learn. I really love the way Giannis had his post-game press conference. I just hope this team hopes and grows for me. Justin, you do a great job on the post-game. All Bucks Nation, we are just – man, we're just stuck right now, man. This is tough. I don't think I'll enjoy the rest of the playoffs. But I really appreciate Bucks post-game all year long. I was on a work trip out of the country, and all I could do was radio stream broadcast. So I was able to listen to your post-game throughout the playoffs, which kind of helped with some of these stupid losses. Good luck to the Miami Heat, man. I hope Butler can – I don't think he's going to score 40 or 50 against these Knicks. I think people will be prepared for him. It's up to Boston and Philly, in my opinion, now from the East, and then we'll see what happens out West, man. But
I'm gonna say not to cut you off. I'm going to say this, and boy, I'd never imagined I'd be saying this. It kind of feels like Philly has the vibe right now.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I never thought I'd say it either. It's wide open. I don't know how much I'll watch. I think we all need just a deep breath from it. I feel like the entire team fumbled this, though, including Coach Bud, the assistant coaches, everyone. Someone has to call that timeout twice. That's two times we fumbled it.
And I think that was the tough part, too. And hearing Bud acknowledge it, too, we should have called a timeout there. Now, look, it's still not ideal because we're talking about a catch-and-shoot, but it at least gives you an opportunity to do something in the half court, to get off a catch and shoot. And the other tough part you mentioned in there as well is, you know, you put yourself in a spot when it seemed like all hope was lost and down by seven in overtime. You still somehow pulled yourself off the mat and were right back in it, even after that foul call on Strus, which I agree with you. He kicked out his foot, and in college, that's a flagrant on the offense. But even after that, and he goes 2 of 3 at the free throw line, you come up with another stop, you make it a 2-point game, you get another stop, and you have a chance to tie it or win it, and you can't even get off a shot. Like, that is one of the tougher parts of going out like this, that you couldn't even take a final shot to win the game or potentially force a second overtime.
Absolutely. And then the last thing I'll leave you with, man, is we fell victim to the play-in tournament, man. These are all excuses, but there are reasons why. Miami should have been playing Boston. We should have been playing Atlanta. This play-in tournament crap, all this stuff where we're trying to make the game more fun, blah, blah, blah. Like, at the end of the day, it should be the top 8 teams, both sides. I know we're fortunate because we have Giannis, so we've never been in that 8, in that 7-10 situation and all that stuff. But, you know, hats off to Miami. For whatever they did. Bucks, I mean, we got a rebound, man. We'll all be here next year. Interesting offseason. I think Brook proved his worth. I'm not saying sign him for 6 or 7 years. Sign him for a 1-year deal. I think he'll understand that he's 35. He knows. And, man, I don't know if we run it back, Justin. I don't know what we do, but, man, I just appreciate you. I appreciate WTMJ. Dave Kane, great job this year. Byington, Zora, Marcus Johnson, Steve Novak, all of you guys, everybody.
I think we lost Justin there, but no, my thanks to Justin for chiming in all season long and for listening to the show. But sadly, the season comes to an end tonight, and I do want to touch on a few of those things that he mentioned from tonight's game. And Obviously, the timeout is something that Bud was asked about, but some of the things that we saw offensively, and look, if there is a reason to point to, it's going to be very tough to run the same group back. Despite everything we said with financial constraints and how this roster is constructed, the number one reason why it's going to be tough to run this group back as is this is yet another season where this half-court offense was not good in the playoffs. And tonight, three made field goals in the fourth quarter. Your offense couldn't do anything in the final 17 minutes of this game. 5 for 25 in the fourth quarter and overtime. Giannis took some tough shots, and we heard from Bud after the game of there were clean looks, there were good looks. We liked what he was getting there. But the reality is, the way this game was going, and once Miami was starting to heat up again, you know, Giannis's little baby hook that he's adapted to this season, the mid-range shot, those have both regressed from where they were a season ago. It's not to say he can't improve on it. It's not to say they can't become dependable shots. But this season, they weren't as reliable as they've been the last two seasons. And you resorted to a lot of that in the fourth quarter, and you didn't make them. And as dependable as Brook Lopez has been throughout this series, you shied away from him the last two games down the stretch. The number one flaw that this offense has had for 5 years now in the postseason is it's tough to find a go-to bucket getter. Chris Middleton has been that guy for you. He hit some tough shots in the half court in 2021, and that's a big reason why he won the title. He did it tonight. But you need more than one guy that you can say, go get us a shot. And that's where this offense has struggled. 855-616-1620. The old National Bank talk and text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. The season comes to an end. The Miami Heat beat the Bucks tonight in overtime, 128-126, and they bounce the Bucks from the playoffs in five games in this first round series. We'll hear from more of you after this on Bucks Talk.
No. No. Every year you work towards something, towards a goal, right? Which is to get a promotion, to be able to take care of your family, to be able, I don't know, provide a house for them or take care of your parents. You work towards a goal. It's not a failure. It's steps to success, you know. And if you've never, I don't want to make it personal. So there's always steps to it, you know. Michael Jordan played 15 years. Won 6 championship. The other 9 years was a failure? That's what you're telling me? No, I'm asking you a question. Yes or no?
No, I mean, I don't think so.
Okay, exactly. So why are you asking me that question? It's a wrong question. There's no failure in sports. You know, there's good days, bad days. Some days you are able to be successful. Some days you're not. Some days it's your turn. Some days it's not your turn. And that's what sports is about. You don't always win. Some other people's going to win. And this year, somebody else is going to win. Simple as that. We're going to come back next year, try to be better, try to build good habits, try to play better, not have a 10-day stretch with playing bad basketball, you know, and hopefully we can win a championship. So 50 years from 1971 to 2021 that we didn't win a championship, it was 50 years of failures? No, it was not. It was steps to it, you know, and we were able to win one. Hopefully we can win another one.
It's Giannis Antetokounmpo after tonight's game in exchange with Eric Name of The Athletic. As it was the same question Eric asked Mike Budenholzer, was this season a failure? And I understand the question, and I think Bud acknowledged that as well. I respect the question. This was a roster that was constructed to win a championship, and it is certainly a disappointment that you have an older group. You brought in a veteran player like a Joe Ingles. You brought in Jay Crowder as well. And not only to not win a championship, but to lose in the first round is a massive disappointment. But as Giannis just said, it's not a failure. And it's not always black and white in sports. If only one team succeeds and 29 fail, in other words. We'll hear a little bit more from Giannis and what he had to say to reporters as the show continues here, but we're taking this as long as you are staying up with us. As the season comes to an end, last night, now into this morning, in very surprising fashion. The Miami Heat eliminate the Bucks from the first round of the playoffs in five games with this 128-126 overtime victory at Fiserv Forum in a game where Jimmy Butler once again was the best player on the floor, scoring 42 points and hitting the game-tying shot that forced overtime. 855-616-1620, the old National Bank talk and text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. And our MVP of this show all season long, Dick in Port Washington, joins us one final time. Dick, how do you process this one?
Well, I'm not the MVP. I'm calling you from Colorado, where all these Denver fans are exuberant because I've worn my shirts all along, and not tomorrow though. I want to break this down into several parts here tonight. Is that tonight one player beat us? Their coach is better than us. And our players, and I'm talking about Giannis, and I know I'm going to get slammed for this. When I look in the eyes of the players during the game, and I'm 73 because I've lived through a lot of these games and that, I don't think Giannis had the same desire. I'm going to be crucified for this, but there was something just missing tonight, okay? And so, yeah, add that up, it's a lot. But my main concern is where we're going in the future. I think, and give me a shot here, we're gonna experience 3 years, 2 to 3 years of mediocrity, because who's gonna sign Middleton? He's gonna sign back with us. All right? They can't run it back. Ingles is done. Crowder, and I don't get this that people say that's a bad deal. How many second-round picks make in the NBA? Well, some are going to come back and say, well, Miami has like six or seven guys that weren't even drafted.
Yeah, I mean, Miami's different. Miami and Toronto are the only two teams that find and develop those guys. Yeah.
Okay. And here is what I think a new discussion has to be made. This, because I worked in a medical school for many years, for 40 years. Giannis admitting that he had some mental health issues with all the exposure that he had. And he was thinking about dropping it, all right? Dropping his occupation, which we probably all have in our lives if we look back on it. And that's for me as a Bucks fan, that's a concern. But for him, that's a real positive thing. Because if he was thinking about this and won a championship, and he allowed this to come out, I don't think Giannis, a guy that pushed his refrigerator with his brothers down the streets of Athens, to save their refrigerator, is to the point where he's making $130 million. It's not as important to him anymore. And I used to call him to the Brewer shows and compare Yelich to Giannis, because Yelich had a premier upbringing, you know, fancy cars to go to all the Little League games in Southern California. And Giannis had a fight for everything. And I used to think that was the difference between Giannis and Yelich. But you know what? After a point, Giannis is going to say, I've done what my family needs. I don't need this anymore. So I think there's a possibility that he's going to say, maybe I'm done with this. And I think the Bucks fans have to realize that. Tonight, he played well. He didn't have the Giannis eye. And that really concerns me. And I think going through the future here, I'm really concerned with the new ownership, the 25% guy from Cleveland, who is a total mess. Thank God we have some minority owners in the state to control it. this thing could disintegrate very rapidly. Now, I know you're going to say I'm Mr. Gloom and Doom all year long. But let me point out one thing. Matthews coming back really helped us tonight.
Yeah.
Last night, two nights ago, I told you. So can I just say, let me hear what you say. But please don't cut me off, because I'm here in Parker, Colorado. I can't hear any of this stuff. Don't cut me off, please.
No. We'll keep you on the line here, Dick. I'll say this. First of all, there's a whole lot of remains to be seen with the ownership change. It's minority ownership, as you pointed out. It's a group of minority owners, and he replaces one of them. He's not the governor for 5 years. But, I mean, look, all we do know is he has spent money with the other ventures that he's owned, and that's what this team is going to need to do with how the roster is constructed. So that's all we know about that before we can rush to any conclusions and assumptions of what that means for the future of this group. The big thing for me...
But he spent money on a quarterback that was toxic. And the only guy that would have spent money on the quarterback that was toxic would have been him. And can I just say one quick thing? Real quick, not related to what we're talking to us. Justin in the Carolinas, there was so much thought talking to him all year long, because we'd be up at late night still talking to you guys. But go on. I'm sorry. I'm going off.
It's fair, but he spent money. We got to see it to know what to expect from Jimmy Haslam in the fold here. So that's the only thing I'll point out. But I have the same concerns you do about this roster makeup. It's already an old team. It's getting older. And when you look at the East, when you look at Boston, and look, they have some big questions, too, whenever their season ends. What's going to happen with Jaylen Brown? But you look at some of these teams that are getting younger and getting more experience and having that athleticism on the wing, 3-and-D guys that can hit shots and score in the half court. To me, I said before he came on, Dick, that's what you're missing the most. Chris Middleton had been the most reliable half-court scorer for you, but you need more of that. And, Giannis just, he didn't have it tonight. And the stats are going to be deceiving, because he had 38 points and 20 rebounds. It wasn't anywhere near efficient. He missed a lot of free throws. The field goal attempts tailed off really after the first quarter, or the makes, I should say, tailed off after the first quarter and certainly in the second half. But the way that they utilized Giannis in the offense has been the problem for 5 years. I mean, he was no longer the screener and the role man. That's where he was starting to be most impactful against this team, because Miami is a team that knows, hey, we got guys that can take charges. As soon as we see him moving, we're going to load up and we're just going to dare the officials to call it a blocking foul. So you need to use Giannis as the screener and the role man. He can't be the guy handling the ball and attacking from the top of the key, because Miami is too smart and is going to combat that. So you do have to make some changes to this personnel group. But again, how do you do that when you're already well over the cap and into the luxury tax? Chris Middleton will have suitors.
Can I ask you one question, though? Like in the NFL, money carries over to the team that you lose the guy. Is that the same thing in the NBA? I'm not sure about. Does that carry over?
If you lose the guy?
No, what I'm saying is that the Packers are paying dead money.
Yeah.
All the NFL teams are.
No.
Is there dead money in the NBA same way?
You only have dead money if you had why am I drawing a blank on it? But the Bucks did it with Larry Sanders when you had your amnesty clause. That's the only dead money. Those are all basically off the books at this point across the league. So there's none of that. But, look, the way it works is, because we're going to hear a lot of it in the coming weeks and months as we get into free agency, you're going to hear fans say, well, just move on from Chris Middleton. Just move on from Brooke Lopez, because those are the two guys that are or can be free agents. But the reality is this, you can't, because the way it works is, you can keep spending if it's your guys and if you have things like bird rights, but you can't go outside. So it's almost like if you've got a credit card and the statement isn't going to close until the 26th, but I can keep spending here, and I'll wait for the interest to tack on after this date of the 26th, and then it'll put me over my limit, but I could buy those things because in the interim, I wasn't over the limit. That's basically how this cap system works, is you got these guys, you're over the limit because of that interest charge, but you can keep keeping those guys and paying them to stay here and basically paying the minimum, but you can't go outside. The only outside option the Bucks have is going to be the taxpayer mid-level exception. Actually, I believe it'll only be the biannual exception because they used their taxpayer on Joe Ingles this past year. So you can pay to keep Joe Ingles, and you can use a different mid-level exception, but we're talking about like $5 to $6 million to throw at somebody. That's what they can spend. Mm-hmm. It's not Chris Middleton and, you know, $46 million is off the books. Let's spend 46. No, you're already into the luxury tax. So you don't have that money in free agency money. You don't have that under the cap. Even if he leaves, which we hope isn't the case, but even if he leaves, it takes that $46 million or whatever it is off and brings you from, hey, we were, you know, $80 million over to now we're 34, so we can't spend that money.
Okay, but here's my question. Let's just say that Chris goes, and we get a guy from Minnesota. I can't think of his name right now, so I'm so focused on the Bucks. But the guy that said the other day that, man, he really respects Bucks because of the way they go at it, the guard from Minnesota.
Anthony Edwards.
Does his salary has to match Chris's to match?
You got
to
be within you got to be within 125% of whatever you're bringing in. So,
okay, you know who I'm talking about.
I know who you're talking. Yeah. Anthony Edwards.
The guy. Thank you, sir.
But here's the counter.
He's the guy who already came out and said he wants to play for Milwaukee. Basically.
Well, I mean, Steph Curry is
and he's
today.
Younger than Chris.
And Steph Curry has hinted at playing with Giannis as well, but here's the counter to it.
Yeah, and he ain't going to leave New York. His wife, in San Francisco, his wife is all out there.
But
Anthony Edwards is a possibility.
Here's the counter to that. What's the Minnesota Timberwolves' motivation to do that? I mean, they're building their franchise around Anthony Edwards, and that's therein lies the issue here with reshaping this roster and why this is really going to be a fascinating offseason for the Bucks is that the players you do have that would be most vulnerable to being moved here are guys that are really most valuable to contending teams. And then we're basically talking about, well, we'll trade whatever we maybe don't value for whatever you don't value.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Justin, I've taken a lot of your time. I really appreciate all my winter nights listening to you. Are you going to have any kind of wrap-up show coming up on WTMJ?
You know, that's a good question, Dick. I haven't heard of any discussion.
I would love to call in. And
well, I know you would. I haven't heard of anything yet, but I think a lot of that has to do with, I think we're still in shell shock that it is over this quickly.
Yeah, but we need a night. We need an hour call in, because this is unbelievable. I mean, get Gruber. Throw some more T-shirts out into this. Throw them onto Wisconsin Avenue. We can do this, because you guys have been great. It's unbelievable. And I know, like, Justin from outside in North Carolina or whatever, there's guys like Kenny. I mean, you guys have done a tremendous job. And there's guys at us, and I'm 73, just turned 73, and this is important to us. And there's a lot of fans that I think listen. And you guys perform a very valuable service. And it's great for us. And I really want to thank you for all you've done for me this year. So I just can't wait. You got to publicize if there's going to be a show, end of the year wrap-up. And it should be. You've done great.
We will if we do have that, we will get it out there and let it be known, so you know when to tune in. And I appreciate all of it, Dick. You've made the show very good as well with your insights. And boy, I don't know if we should leave on this, but did you hear about Jordan Wara's tweet tonight?
Yeah, and you know what? All I'm going to say is that just reinforces what I've said all year long. You know? I mean, all he thinks about is of himself. And I said that all along. Because all he wanted to do, get on the court is shoot, shoot, shoot. Defense was never an option for him. But that's I don't want to steer with that at the end of the year. Because you know what? He watched from wherever he lived. He wasn't even in the playoffs.
Yeah. And he still owes me a pair of shoes, too. So I've turned the corner.
Oh, does he really? You're not going to get them, buddy.
No, I've come to that realization. Dick, if we do an end-of-season show, I'm pretty hopeful we can do that. But if we do, we will certainly get the information out there so we can talk to you one more time.
Thank you so much. You and your producer have been great. This has been great for me. It's been great for my wife, who's always listened and corrected me. This is great. It's still a great year for the Bucks. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, I mean, 50-plus wins and the one seed. That, look, thanks for
tremendous.
The call. Yeah, thanks for the call tonight and all season long, Dick, as he drops off. And still some time to hear from you, as I mentioned. It is 1:30 in the morning, and we will take this as long as you guys are out there as this season comes to an end in the first round, something we did not think we would be saying 10 days ago when this season or when this series began on the 16th. Unbelievable that the Miami Heat have eliminated the Bucks from the playoffs in five games. 855-616-1620, the Old National Bank talk and text line. Still a few callers on the line. We will get to you in just a moment. More after this on Bucks Talk. 128-126, final score here inside of Fiserv Forum. The Miami Heat, behind 42 points from Jimmy Butler, come to Milwaukee and end the Bucks season with a win in overtime and end this series in five games. 855-616-1620, the Old National Bank talk and text line to join us tonight on the final edition of Bucks Talk this season. Joe in Madison, you're up next.
Hey, Justin. Tough loss tonight. Just really heartbreaking because, like you said, the inability to close things out. If that's the one bright spot. I mean, technically, like we were up in the fourth quarter in both games, but still blew the leads. But two points I have. Number one, is the one seed really that meaningful? Because if you look at the past four or five NBA champions, the Warriors, they weren't the one seed last year. The Bucks weren't the one seed when they won it. Neither were they and then the previous 2 years with the Raptors and the Lakers, they weren't one seeds, I don't think. The Lakers weren't a one seed in the bubble, right?
No.
Yeah. And then the Raptors, they weren't a one seed in 2019. The last one seed to win it all, I believe, was Golden State.
The Warriors, yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
So is it really that meaningful? Because I don't think that's just that's more of a trend, not a statistic. Like, trends show that one seeds don't win championships.
Yeah, so I'll answer that in a sec. Do you have anything else from tonight's game, Joe? Because we got a handful of people waiting yet.
Oh, and then officials. It seems really hypocritical by the NBA that the NBA, you're obligated as a player and a coach to meet with the media, and if you don't, you'll get scrutinized. But officials never have to answer questions by media reporters.
Officials do meet. You have a pool reporter that's selected, so there's one of the local reporters will meet with an official after the game.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Thanks for the call, all Joe, right. And your point, too, of the one seed. So we went through this a couple of years ago and did the legwork and tried to figure out what's the optimal seed to win the title here. And for the most part, it's the two seed that has the most success. What made this year different is you had Philadelphia, Boston, and Milwaukee, and it really seemed like those three teams were in a separate class from every other team in the Eastern Conference. So the one seed was important because if you could eliminate that path where you wouldn't have to go through both, but rather one, that was the ideal path that you wanted to take. Because remember, when the Bucks won the title, it was the Bucks, the Nets, and the Sixers. Like, Philadelphia was supposed to come out of that other bracket. It wasn't supposed to be the Atlanta Hawks you were facing. And that was another part of some of the pessimism of, man, you won't have home court against Brooklyn in the second round. You got to play Brooklyn, and then we're going to have to go through Philadelphia, and we won't have home court for that. So, as we've seen, the old adage with best laid plans, it happened in 2021 to the Bucks' advantage. It happened this year as the one seed is bounced in the first round of the playoffs. So ordinarily, no, the one seed is not that important. The big thing is just avoiding as many of those landmines as you can and those obstacles that you have to go through. But who would have guessed that a landmine would be waiting there for you in the first round? I do think this, and Dave Kane and I kind of joked about this after the game tonight. I was only half joking. I do wonder if this really pushes us and accelerates a change in the play-in tournament. So we had kind of mentioned in passing of, man, you know, the difficult part for the Bucks is the 8 seed isn't determined until Friday, 2 days before the playoffs start. So you don't know who you're playing until right before the series starts. The 2 seed, they know who their opponent is on Tuesday. So you get close to a week to prepare for that matchup. And look, 1 versus 8, you should win that series regardless. This season has been interesting because you got the Lakers, who appear to be headed towards the second round of the playoffs now. They came out of the play-in tournament. That's a team, though, that has LeBron James, Anthony Davis. They dealt with injuries earlier in the season. They don't really feel like a 7th seed. This Miami Heat team, this is not an 8 seed. And again, this is still a team you should beat when we look at the matchups on paper. This is a game you should have won tonight. It's a game you should have won on Monday in Game 4. It's a series you should win, especially with no Tyler Hero, especially when you line up these rosters side by side. The Bucks have the overwhelming advantage with talent, so you should win this regardless. This is not an 8 seed. They're a year removed from being the 1 seed. The only real change to that roster was P.J. Tucker moving on from Miami to Philadelphia. The Miami Heat, in all likelihood, are closer to a 6 seed, maybe even a 5 seed. So 1 versus 6, 1 versus 5, you're still going to have the advantage and still should win there. That's not to make an excuse for it. But this was really one of the all-time unfortunate draws for a 1 seed in the first round of the playoffs. And to tie it all together, it takes something like this happening for any type of change to happen. You'd heard it kicked around briefly of, man, how do you change that play-in tournament because of the time to prepare and because of the fact that what happens if a team is dealing with an injury or something? Their star player goes down, they're in the play-in tournament, and all of a sudden that's what your reward is for finishing with the best or second-best record in the league. I think something like this happening may move us towards a path where if you're the 1 seed, you get to choose which of those two teams you play. So in other words, Miami finishing 8th, losing that first matchup, if the Bucks had their druthers, they would have chosen the Atlanta Hawks to play them. And I think when you see the 1 seed go down to a play-in tournament team, that's the type of thing to happen to get those wheels in motion. It's not an excuse. It's not the reason why the Bucks lost, but I think every single one of us, when this matchup was set, would have said, man, I would have really loved it if Miami would have won that game on Tuesday, and they're the 7th seed playing the Celtics, and we get either the Hawks, the Raptors, or the Chicago Bulls. 855-616-1620, the old National Bank talk and text line. Jim in Kenosha, you're up next.
Yeah, hi, do you hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, hi. I agree with what you're saying and with what a previous caller said about this play-in tournament. We really should not have been playing the Heat. We should have been playing the Hawks. But anyway, what I really wanted to call about and talk about was, did we have a timeout? You know, we had that last possession with about 10 seconds left. Why didn't we call a timeout there was one thing I was wondering about. First of all, just I was at the game, so I'm actually driving back from the game. So everything's kind of fresh. I didn't have the benefit of, you know, watching it on TV, hearing the announcers give all the details, et cetera. So everything was kind of moving fast. So did we even have a timeout? Because I'm wondering why we didn't call a timeout with 10, you know, with that 10, last 10-second possession.
So they did have a timeout. They did have a timeout, and Bud was asked about it, and I don't recall word for word his answer, but it was basically that's how we've seen them operate all season and for the last five seasons with Bud, too, that I think there was some fear of, number one, you got to stop, and you were in transition. So you liked your chances there, especially when that started out with Giannis, that maybe you could catch Miami a little flat-footed, and your half-court offense hasn't been great. So I think that the hesitation was, I don't want to call the timeout immediately because we have Giannis going up the floor here, and let's see if he can find a mismatch. When it started to break down, it was probably already too late, and I don't recall what he said there, but I believe he kind of hinted at, well, it was kind of too late by that point when it got in the hands of Grayson Allen. And I think, in hindsight, Grayson Allen probably should have taken that shot immediately when he's at the top of the key, because you hit that, you
Absolutely.
Win the game, right? But the other part of it is once Giannis got rid of the ball, and he had to because Jimmy Butler was kind of setting him up for that trap and trying to draw the charge. Once he got rid of the ball, though, you had, I believe, around 4 seconds left, somewhere around that. Calling a timeout there, the problem with it is, again, your half-court offense to say was brutal is putting it mildly. Your half-court offense was not executing, and if you call a timeout, you're giving Miami a chance to set their defense and really clamp down on an area that had been a weakness for you in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I see that side of it, but in my opinion, when you call a timeout, if you're a great coach of a championship team, a championship coach,
you got an out-of-timeout play.
Polstra, then you should be able to call a play that you think is going to get a guy wide open. I mean, you look at the end of the game, at the end of regulation, what an amazing coach's play that the coach drew up, Spoelstra, who's an amazing coach. Everybody thought Jimmy Butler was going to take some shot out in the perimeter, and he ends up right in front of the basket and ends up hitting like a little floater, falling away. Nobody saw that coming, which leads to my next point about what I wanted to call about is, at the end of regulation, why in the world do you take out Brook Lopez right at the last second he walked off the court? That would have been your rim protector for that shot that Butler hit at the end there. I mean, it was a wild flailing shot. You have Lopez there, he easily blocks that. So I don't understand why you take out Lopez in that situation.
So Bud was asked about that that too. And thanks for the call, Jim. Bud was asked about that too, and it said, you know, Miami was playing with five smalls. They were playing with perimeter guys, and I don't fault him for that because we're having a different conversation then. If you leave Brook Lopez in, and Brook Lopez ends up on the perimeter trying to defend a Duncan Robinson or someone and can't keep up with him, and the Miami Heat hit a three-pointer and win it in regulation. So I get the rationale and the thought to say, okay, Miami's not going with any bigs here. They're trying to spread the floor. We got to keep up with that. So Brook Lopez exits. You know you left yourself vulnerable for that, but again, you can't lose on a play at the rim. Assuming you don't foul, you can't lose on a play at the rim. It can only be tied. Whereas on the flip side, you keep Brook Lopez out there. Miami goes small. You find a mismatch and you run Brook Lopez off the line, or you have him chase you around and you get an open look. You can lose the game on that shot. So that was the rationale for Bud. And that's another. In hindsight, it would have been great to have Brook Lopez out there. But if that's the case, Miami doesn't run that play, and maybe Miami gets a clean look at a three and wins it in regulation. 855-616-1620, the old National Bank Talk and Text Line. Pedro in Brookfield, you're up next.
Hey, Justin, thanks for taking my call. Hey, I have a really simplistic point and a little bit of data to back it up, but truly I think let me first say I love Giannis. as a representative of Milwaukee. He's an absolutely phenomenal basketball player, father, son to his parents, representative of this great city of ours. But I think if every Bucks fan, if you look at a two-point difference in the game tonight and throughout his career with Milwaukee, the reason we lost tonight is because he shot, what was it, 10 of 23 free throws.
Yeah.
Okay, he shot 43% from the free throw line. And that was the key to this loss. And it has cost the Bucks countless games throughout his career. My analogy would be, think about Mason Crosby. Here, when you're at a free throw line, it's you, a 15-foot basket at 10 feet high. You don't have Jimmy Butler running into your face. You don't have Love running into your face. You don't have to do a Euro step and make a spectacular spin the ball out of your fingers, reverse off the backboard. It's you, 15 feet, and a 10-foot basket. I coached eighth-grade basketball for 10 years. And as a team, we shot 80%. I had eighth-grade boys shooting higher than 70% at a free-throw line. The other example would be Shaq, right? Remember Hack-a-Shaq? Shaq won 4 NBA titles, but across his career, he shot 52%. That's the one thing that any million-dollar NBA, even minimum salary, whatever it is, $500,000 minimum salary NBA guy, 13th guy on the bench, should shoot 80%. It's muscle memory. There's nobody in your face. There's nobody running at you. You're not, you know, catching and going up right away. It's unbelievable to me that any NBA player cannot shoot at least 66,
whoa,
2 out of 3 of every single free throw. And that's why the Bucks lost. And whoa, again, it's not a hash on Giannis. He's an amazing basketball player. And he has, and we did see him do, what, 20, what was it, 17 out of 19 or whatever.
In game 6,
but,
yeah.
Holy Christmas. Yeah. Yes, please, Justin. I'd love to hear your response.
Yeah, well, and thanks for the call, too, Pedro. I mean, you either have the touch or you don't. I mean, you pointed out Shaq. Giannis is very comparable to Shaq with the way that he plays, especially early Shaq. I mean, we think of the lumbering 300-pound version of Shaq that was winning those championships with the Lakers, but young Shaq in Orlando was built like Giannis and was a guy that was bringing the ball, not every single time, but could bring the ball up and down the floor. So Giannis really is the modern-era Shaq. He's not a great free throw shooter. He's not a consistent free throw shooter. And it stings tonight to see 10 of 23 at the free throw line, to see the team miss 17 free throws. But as you pointed to, we've seen him hit them in the past. And Giannis has always said, and really up until tonight, you could say, yeah, that's accurate. He's always said, look, I hit them when they matter. In the game against the Suns to close out the finals, where I believe he only missed one free throw. He's had performances like that. Tonight wasn't great. And tonight was the first time where you needed it. And he didn't hit him when they mattered. He started 5 of 7. He finished the game 5 of 16 on free throws. But it wasn't just Giannis. Brooke was 1 of 3. You missed 17 free throws as a team. Now, Giannis missed 13 of them. But you missed 17 free throws as a team. But it wasn't just free throw shooting. You were outscored in the paint, and again, you did not use Brook Lopez enough. Brook Lopez played 43 minutes tonight. You think back to 2021 when Brook Lopez wasn't on the floor as much, when it was, well, you can't play Brook in this series. Well, Miami was one of those rosters where it was, hey, it's going to be tough to keep Brook on the floor against this personnel group, and yet he played 43 minutes. He was dominant in Game 4. He's been dominant for most of this series. He wasn't utilized enough tonight. 7 of 11 from the floor with no size. And especially when Kevin Love and Bam Adebayo both fouled out. And I understand when both of those guys were gone, it was already in overtime and it was getting late. But you need more from Brook Lopez. And that's not me saying Brook Lopez didn't do enough. Brook Lopez wasn't featured enough. That was a problem. Free throws, not utilizing your size and going to Brook enough, getting outscored in the paint, 52-48. Turnovers, and they were problematic live ball turnovers that the Miami Heat scored 24 points off of. Those were killing you in the first half. And once again, you gave up a high volume of threes to this Miami team. They hit 17 three-pointers. This is not a good three-point shooting team. And I fully expect to see a little bit of regression on the three-point shooting for the Miami Heat in round two against the New York Knicks. But it was a handful of things. There was a whistle that wasn't favorable for the Bucks. They missed too many free throws. They didn't utilize their size and score in the paint enough. They didn't do a great job consistently of contesting threes. They were really locked in the third quarter. And even at the end of that quarter, Dave Kane and I, you know, we talked, I mentioned about the 16-point lead. I said, man, this, it feels like it should be more. But either way, 16, it's not over. But in that third quarter, when this team really buckled down and played dominant defense, we both turned to each other and said, why can't you do this consistently? We've touted this team's defensive prowess all season long. For large portions of the season, they were the number one rated defense. They finished fourth. They were 18th. The last 6 weeks of the season, from March 1st on, they were 18th in defensive rating. Now, obviously, the last handful of games, you didn't play Giannis, Drew, Chris, Joe Ingles, Brook. You had some very questionable lineups out there. But that doesn't account for 6 weeks. So there were some kind of warning signs out there all the way back to the last month of the season. But this team has the personnel to do it. And watching them do that in the third quarter was the most frustrating part, because it was as simple as, well, I understand you can't play 48 minutes of hell, for lack of a better phrase here, but why can't you bottle this and do this more consistently in this series with your back against the wall? It wasn't just the missed free throws. And I know you're not saying that's all on Giannis, but it was a number of things tonight and in this series that led to the Bucks' ultimate demise.